Hey, hey, Screeters. Welcome to the show. Have you ever had one of those times that you do a podcast and everybody and their brother call in and they want to talk about it? Me too. I mean, not everybody, and I don't think anybody's brother. The brothers Green haven't had a twofer in some time, but I think we had that. So what I've done is I've taken all the call-ins for the engagement, meaning return on investment, I think. And I don't even know if I did a very good job. Sometimes it's not easy to split up, you know, Jackson-type call-ins when you got multiple ones. But today all I was going to do is publish the responses to most specifically the coup de grace question. And we actually have tons and tons of people that have responded, including Joe the Lawyer, Tim Shorts, Froth, I believe, a couple other people. I don't even know, guys. There are a lot of people called in. I appreciate it. I am so thankful to have listeners and callers. So even Howard Bailiff himself called in and gave a detailed response. I'd like to know what you guys think of it. Is it legit? I don't know. I do know. Today is June 27th, Thursday, 2019. I am Jason Hobbs, and this is Random Screed.
If he is up or down, his podcast still comes round. Hobbs is in his van. Don't turn off that sat-nav, man. Random Screed, don't know what you get, but it's what you need.
Hey, it's Rob again. I'd say in a BX game with a coup de grace situation, I would have the person or creature being dispatched make a death saving throw. And if they failed the saving throw, they would be dead. If they passed it, they'd take maximum damage from the weapon being employed. And if it were a thief doing this, I'd say that their backstab modifier would be used. As far as increasing difficulty in a sandbox situation, I think that would be hard to avoid as a DM. The natural inclination is to try and keep pace, I think, in a game like D&D with incremental levels, players getting more powerful as the game continues. Even though you have those random encounter tables and things, I think the players might even demand more of a challenge. I don't know. It all depends on a group, like so many things.
Hey, Jason, coup de grace. God, I hate saying that word. Anyways, if somebody's in combat, I still have them make them roll like we did in the kill box when that Noel killed Joe's character but rolled a nat 20. But if it's outside of combat, then it's automatic. That's basically how I decided, because even if you're sleeping and you're still fighting with a bunch of people, you're still going to need to have to take that measured shot. Definitely going to be a lot easier, but it's not an automatic thing. So that's kind of how I play it. So in combat, you got to roll. Outside of combat, automatic. All right, take care, bud.
It's better to play. As you say, it's better to burn out than fade away. Well, it's better to play than not play at all. And then another thing on the, I guess, what is it? The diminishing returns. I'd still play. It's one of those things, you know, sometimes people ask me, and I did this for a while, is even if I wasn't playing with anybody or had the OSR, I'd still be drawing maps. I'd still be writing for adventures for non-existent people I would play with, because that's my creative outlet and that's what I do. So I guess in my way, I still get a pretty good return on it, because it's not solely dependent on the interaction of others. It's actually the act of creating that pays off the biggest dividends for me, where the bonus is when I get to play with other folks.
Hey, man, Joe the Lawyer. First, as to the what you're doing in terms of stepping up and being a president of your group, that's cool, man. Good for you. That's putting yourself out there and trying to grow. That's awesome. Hang in there with the depression, you know. I think this podcast slowdown, I mean, it's just summer. Like, all games always slow down. D&D games slow down during the summer for me. You know, people aren't as available to play and this and that. And so I think it probably extends the podcasts too. I know I don't have time to listen to them as much as I used to. I'm doing things on the weekends now, you know, sometimes at nights. So I think that's probably what's going on. As to the whole coup de grace thing, if someone's sleeping or can't move, they're dead. It doesn't even take a roll. I mean, you don't have to slice the throat. You just stick the dagger into the throat. Find jugular, insert dagger, dead. There's no need. Next, I'll do a Jackson here. And in terms of the return on the investment of the earlier part of the podcast you're talking about, I think that I'm getting more and more return on the investment because the more I put in, the more I get out of it. And as I get older, I'm able to put more into it because I don't know how to say it. There's more to me, and I don't mean just I'm fatter. I mean there's more. I have more knowledge. I have more understanding of the world, of people, how things work. I couldn't have done this kind of game, the games that I'm running now with all these different groups when I was 20. I didn't have, and what the fuck, what do we know when we're 20 anyway? I don't know shit. We think we know everything. We don't know jack shit, right? I couldn't have done this kind of a game then because I didn't have the knowledge base. I didn't have the world experience. Didn't know how things worked as well, right? So I try to put all that stuff into the fantasy game, and out comes my weird mix of a game. So I think the more I put into it, the more I'm getting out of it. It's just more of a return on investment, really.
Hobbs, it's Froth, listening to you talk about hitting sleeping opponents. Well, the actual rule in first edition, not saying anybody has to play by the rules, is that an opponent that's magically asleep, held, paralyzed, or totally immobile is an automatic hit. So if they're sleeping, it would be an automatic hit. However, it makes a distinction between regular sleep and magical sleep or being held. So if you're magically asleep or held and it's in melee, it's an automatic hit at twice the normal rate and the maximum damage possible according to the weapon type or attack mode. Otherwise, if you're not in melee and they're magically held, such opponents may be automatically slain or bound as appropriate to materials at hand and size at a rate of 1 per round. And again, it notes that this does not include normally sleeping opponents. So by the book, for you, it would have been an automatic hit, but not necessarily an automatic kill. I don't know if that helps or adds more confusion. See you later. To add to the further fun and confusion, it refers you to the assassination table if you're attacking a non-magically sleeping, helpless opponent, whether you're an assassin or any character class. And you use a cross-reference table based on your level and the hit dice of the victim, and there's a percentage dice chance that you'll automatically kill them or not. What's unclear is if the rule against magically sleeping opponents, where you get to, like, say you have one attack normally, you would get to attack twice and then do your max damage twice, whether that pertains to regularly sleeping creatures. I would assume that it does, so you would have had a chance to automatically kill on the assassination table. If not, you would have gotten your max backstab and everything on it. So you probably would have killed it anyway. I know it's confusing. No wonder they house rule it. See ya.
Hey, Hobbsy, it's Howard from the Goblin Stomp cast. Yes, you did a fine job really promoting me all over this particular random screen. Thank you for that. This may take two voicemails, so we'll see how it goes. But with regard to the coup de grace and your attack on the ogres, I would say that it was a combination of using what rules there are and me as the DM considering possible problems in that situation that might occur. The ogre's AC does not disappear completely when you're in that position. So, I wanted to make it both sort of somewhat by the book and somewhat by my brain. I wanted it to be fun. Voicemail 2. So, to follow up with that, I don't think that there should be some sort of 100% predetermined way. I mean, yeah, in BX, I agree that that the coup de grace, it's really like a mainstay of survival. But in first edition, I believe there are other factors. And clearly, one of the big ones with regard to Nox's death, and I think everybody sort of pointed it out, was that the party was indeed split. And I think that we all know that a basic tenet of the game is don't split the party. I'm glad you had a good time. Your boisterousness was not a problem, as I've said earlier in the week. We are still playing again on Wednesday, as far as I know, and unless there's an issue, and I am enjoying it. So let's keep it rolling. Later.
Random screed, random screed, random screed. It's what you need. Wah!
All right, screeders, there you have it. A plethora of opinions. I just want to let you guys know what people thought, and I think I'll let you make your own decisions. You heard mine. Is there a difference between BX and AD&D? I don't know. Tonight, it's time for Road Crew Black Powder, Black Magic, and Brimstone. I'll let you all know how it comes out, and maybe we'll get to some more of these call-ins next time. It's better to burn out than to fade away. Our introduction music was so graciously provided by Darren Green and RFED Company.